Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Did you know that you have the power to create your own financial destiny? As our guest, Chris Guillebeau, New York Times bestselling author of The $100 Startup, Side Hustle, Happiness of Pursuit, and his new book, The Money Tree, says, "You are never at the mercy of fortune as long as you have an appetite for hard work and a willingness to step outside of your comfort zone."
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Compton Game, where we flip the script on the old-school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
I have been a big fan of Chris's for years now. I share this in the interview, but I think I've read his book, The $100 Startup, about 10 times, maybe more. It is definitely one of my staples. Needless to say, I was super, super excited to talk with him about his new book, The Money Tree. His thoughts on financial freedom, entrepreneurship, and practical ways that he thinks you can start right now to build your own money tree. So I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did talking with Chris. Well, I am fangirling over here because your book, The $100 Startup, it literally changed my life. I think read it 6 to 10 times easily. So I just want to say first on behalf of everyone listening, if you've not read it, but thank you for sharing this knowledge with
us. So cool. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Well, you've done all the work. You've built the community to what it is. So congratulations to you.
Yeah. There's so much I want to talk to you about, but I wanted to start with, because most of us probably won't be traveling anytime soon. Mm-hmm. You have visited You say every country in the world, which is just crazy by your 35th birthday. So tell me a little bit, like, what sparked this idea?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good thing I've already finished it because, you know, that would be a, this would put a damper on it. What sparked the idea? Well, I loved to travel. I was an aid worker for several years in West Africa. I lived in the Philippines for 2 years when I was a kid. So I'd been a fair number of places. And I really enjoyed the process of it and enjoyed being in different situations and such. And then I was also always a list maker. So I'm a big fan of like writing down my list of things to do and my ideas and, you know, various things. And so I made a list of all the countries I'd been to. And at the time, I think it was something like 30. And I was like, okay, let me set a goal to go to 100 countries, basically. And I got closer to the 100 countries. And then I thought, let's go to every country, because if you just go to half of the countries in the world, then it's kind of easy because you can pick and choose and such. And so it just turned into this quest that then turned into a whole bunch of other stuff that I never really expected. So I guess it just started because I was interested in doing it. I wanted to know if it was possible.
Yeah. What, do you have a top three list of some of your favorite countries?
I mean, there's a lot of places in the world that I like. I guess my top three list would include Australia. It would probably include South Africa and maybe Hong Kong as well, let's say.
Really? That's awesome.
But I just
like
to travel. I just like the process of like planning trips and going to new places and being kind of immersed in something that's a little bit different.
Do you have any great money saving tips for travel?
I mean, I built a whole business around it for a while. I had this business called Travel Hacking Cartel, which is no longer active. But if you go to my website, you can read like basically all the same information for free. I mean, I did a lot of the trip or the series of trips using frequent flyer miles, using mistake fares, using lots of different things that I learned about as I went along, so that it wouldn't be that expensive. And so all that stuff is freely available.
So hopefully we get to a point. I don't know when it's going to be. Maybe a year from now. I'm not sure. But hopefully we get to a point in time when we can travel again and we can have those experiences, because I think you just learn so much from seeing different cultures. And also, you learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah, that's good. I think I learned as much about myself as I did about other cultures. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
And you obviously are built this whole entire career around being self-employed, a big advocate for being self-employed. Did you always grow up with that idea of being an entrepreneur, or did you just kind of find yourself down that path?
I'm not sure I knew what an entrepreneur was when I was growing up. I just knew I didn't want to work for other people. Like I wasn't good at having a job, basically. And so this whole like big concept of entrepreneurship and such kind of came later. Or even like the idea that, you know, self-reliance is such a critical thing. We can change the world by looking after ourselves, creating our own security, et cetera. Like all this kind of stuff that I have based a lot of what I do on now. In the beginning, it was just how can I pay my bills, basically? Like, you know, from age 19 onwards, I always worked for myself, and I didn't, like, once I started with that, it was like, I'd never want to go back. It's very hard once you have experienced a bit of freedom, you know, the ability to set your own schedule and such, and the ability to make more money if you work harder, if you work smarter, if you learn a new skill and such. Like, that's very difficult to like go back to a regular job and like, okay, now I'm going to work at the bank, you know?
Right.
So fortunately, I never went to work at the bank.
Yeah, I always tell people that I'm allergic to fluorescent lights, which of course isn't true, but it's just that feeling that I get when I step into like an office building where it's like, I do not belong here at all.
Yeah, well, you might be allergic to people telling you what to do. Which is
another
common allergy.
Yeah, I probably am allergic to that one. Well, I'm curious, being self-employed, have you had any like mindset shifts or anything that's gone on during these last few weeks that have been sort of aha moments for you?
I don't know if I've had a ton of aha moments. I mean, I try to practice gratitude. You know, my life is pretty good compared to a lot of people, in the sense that I'm impacted in one way with my career. Like, I was supposed to do a book tour. I was going to be in 40 cities, and now I can't do that. So that's discouraging, but obviously people have much bigger problems than that. For me, like, I've always worked from home. I've always worked on my own, and I'm an introvert, and I spend a lot of time by myself writing or working on projects and such. So a lot of things are not that different for me. I think what's different is just kind of like being in one place, you know, for all that. And, you know, choosing to connect with people, you know, more virtually, more digitally and stuff. So I think most of my aha moments aren't really about my experience. It's more just like noticing, you know, millions of people now are working remotely for the first time. And so they're all kind of like jumping into this world, you know, that's very familiar to me and probably you and some of the listeners as well. But it's interesting to see a lot of the, I think a lot of industries and a lot of companies that have said in the past, it's not possible, you know, for us to do remote work and all of our people have to be in one place. Something like this happens and they realize actually we can do, like it actually can work, you know, for us to be kind of spread apart. And so I think one of the things that's going to be most interesting is when all of this ends, whenever that is, like even if it were tomorrow, I don't think, you know, all these millions of people are suddenly going to go back to the way things were. I think like they've had that freedom and they're like, maybe there's another way, right?
Yeah. I'm super curious about that myself, because obviously this has changed us in so many different ways. And do we just snap back into the same culture that we were before, or are there changes in different industries where technology is used more? I think one of the coolest things I was thinking about the other day was, you know, all these late night talk show hosts are having to use Zoom and other technology that is pretty much accessible to you and I and really to anybody. And it's really leveled the playing field in certain ways, which I think is just really fascinating.
It is like a whole other way to flatten the curve, you know, that whole experience, like they're flattening the learning curve, the accessibility curve. And like now the things that you think were not accessible to you or prohibitive or something, you're like, maybe I can actually do that, which is how it's been for entrepreneurship for a long time and people starting little businesses. But it helps to have examples. It helps to have stories. It helps to become mainstream, because until you know somebody who's doing it, then you're not likely to buy into it yourself. Like it doesn't take a podcaster or an author to convince you of this. It takes your friend or your cousin who always had a job, and then all of a sudden now they've started this thing and they're making money, and you're like, wow, how did they do that?
Yeah. And I've gotten a lot of questions from listeners lately, those who are now tiptoeing or stepping fully into the entrepreneur, self-employed world, if you will, trying different things, obviously to make money or chasing after their passion that they always wanted to do. So there's this myth around having to spend a lot of money to make money, a lot of limiting beliefs around that. Can you talk to any of those beliefs or maybe smash some of those for us?
Sure. I mean, so 10 years ago, I wrote The $100 Startup, as you mentioned, and you know, I was chronicling all these different case studies and stories of people who started without spending money. And, you know, since then I've heard from, countless people who have either read the book or independently on their own started their own project, you know, for a lot less than $100. You know, it's like I need to update the title or something. And I started this podcast a few years ago where I'm telling stories of people who have jobs and, you know, find a way to create a new source of income. And they almost always do so without going into debt and usually without spending much money at all. So I think you kind of nailed it when you said limiting beliefs. I think just kind of identifying a constraint and saying, oh, I can't do that because of this thing. In some ways it's helpful because it allows you to defer. It allows you to put something off that you need to do. And so when something comes along, some evidence comes along, let's say that is counter to that, and you're like, oh, I don't actually need to have money to do this, or I can use Zoom, you know, just like Jimmy Fallon does, you know, and I can have virtual meetings, you know, or whatever it is that I need to do. I can provide a consultation to somebody in Singapore or New Zealand with this same technology that's either free or extremely low cost. I wonder what I should do now. I wonder what my next step is.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's really exciting, and it's sort of within myself renewed maybe a sense of creativity that probably was, you know, I pushed aside a little bit. So, I mean, for me, it's really interesting. And I know you were talking obviously today about your new book, The Money Tree. Mm-hmm. And did you launch like right when quarantine started happening?
Pretty much. I mean, it was like 2 weeks after or so, depending on which part of the country or the world you're in. I mean, it was like I had everything planned out for the tour. I mean, it was pretty much like the worst possible timing. Although I guess I suppose, now that I say that, like there's always something to be grateful for. It probably would have been worse if I had started the tour, you know, and like then it's like after I've done four cities of the 40, it's like, oh, can't, you know, because there's so much preparation that's involved for that. So maybe it wasn't that bad. Yeah, it was a couple weeks. It was like a couple weeks after like I realized it just was not going to be possible. So in some ways, it was an easy decision to make to not do the tour because it was just impossible. Like it wasn't like I wanted to and, you know, and I just decided not to or something. So yeah, but it was, I mean, it was like, okay, what's next? You know, that's the way I've done all of my other books. I've done extensive tours and it's not always economically worth it in the short term because I'm going lots of places to speak to a relatively small number of people, but that's how I built my community. So I'm really invested in that. And at the same time, you shouldn't just do the thing that you've done before because that's what you know how to do. So in that case, perhaps it was a good opportunity for me to kind of reflect and say, well, what should I try differently?
Yeah. And now I've seen your face everywhere. I mean, I see your face on Facebook and Instagram, and you're always talking to me about the book. So I love it.
Trying.
I love
that you, that's a goal,
right?
That's
I love that you found new ways to, I think that's really inspiring because again, we're talking about this, like leveling the playing field, and I think maybe infuses somebody else who wants to write a book and maybe doesn't quite have your platform, but has this mechanism now for getting their book out into the world.
Well, I hope they write that book. I mean, platform, there's no like blog fairy, you know, that comes along and here's your like audience.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice.
I mean, you build the, I never had like a viral success. I never had, you know, it was like step by step. It was like one person by one person, you know? So you shouldn't let the lack of audience, you know, prohibit you from writing a book if you have something to say.
Exactly. Exactly. And the Money Tree, I sat, over two weekends and read through the whole book. And I really love, you talk about obviously this idea of finding fortune in your own backyard, but I love the premise because you use the story to get across money lessons rather than just preaching at someone. And I don't want to spoil it, of course, for everyone. I want everyone to read it. But can you give us a little tease about the central character in this book? His name is Jake Ahrens, and some of the things he's up against finding his own money tree.
Yes. So as you put it, it's a story. It's a narrative, which I've never done before. All of my books have been nonfiction, and this is my first fiction. But I'm also trying to teach through it, so it's a little bit of a hybrid genre. And Jake, the main character, he is a hard worker. He's got a decent job. He's a millennial. But he's experiencing all this financial pressure that comes first in the form of a lot of student loans coming due. And what I think tends to happen in life is like, it's not just one thing. Whenever you have like financial pressure, it's not compartmentalized. It affects the rest of your life as well. And so it affects his relationship. It affects his day job performance. Like things kind of go from bad to worse and such. And he's like, well, what do I do? You know, how do I solve this? And he can't just work harder because he's already doing, you know, a lot of hours at his day job. He can't just drive for Uber. That's not going to help. It's not really going to help pay off debt and, you know, make some significant money. And so he starts going to this group that meets every week called the Third Way. And everybody going to this group is all trying to make money apart from their job. Some of them are trying to quit their job and go all in with something. Others are just trying to, you know, build more security, have more options, like to recession proof their career and such. And they all have to do it without spending money. Basically, they want to make money without spending money. And so he goes through this process, this journey, and tries some different things. And the middle portion of the book takes place in Ethiopia. I used to live in Africa long ago, so it was fun to write that whole section.
Yeah.
And you know, so basically my goal is that readers can read the book and, you know, enjoy it and find it interesting, even if they don't think much about starting a business, but then they will learn something along the way. And there's a lot of people who don't read business books, you know, even as a like business how-to author, I know very well, but like the list of people or the group of people that read business how-to books, it's pretty small compared to the list of people or the group of people that read fiction. And so I'm hoping to reach a more mainstream audience with this one.
I love the idea of it being hybrid. I think it's a really, really cool format. How did you decide to shift and write a book that is really more fiction based?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I love hybrid too. Publishers, and not just publishers, because I actually have a good relationship with my publisher, but the publishing industry, let's say, they do not understand hybrid, you know, just because hybrid is so different, right? Like, and it's,
yeah.
they want everything to be exactly the same as everything that came before, maybe with like a slight modification, but like,
you nothing be in able the gray to, area.
Right. Exactly. You want this is like Eat, Pray, Love, but with, you know, a slight twist or something.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's, how did I come up with it? I've been thinking about it for a couple of years and I just didn't really have the story or the characters. And then And then I just started working on it more. And I began this process of outlining. I probably spent 3 months outlining without writing and just kind of thinking it through and thinking about this person and what's really going on there. Like, what's the obvious problem? And then what's the understated problem? And that's kind of how life is, right? It's like you have like, so financial pressure is the obvious problem. But then like the deeper internal problem is you feel like you're not good enough, or you feel like you're a failure, or you feel like, you know, you don't deserve, you know, a healthy relationship or a good income or whatever it is that you want in life, or all those things. And so I just spent a lot of time thinking about who this person was and what kind of trouble he could get into and how he might get out of trouble and how that connects to a lot of the people that I talk to every day and hear from in my community. And so then I actually wrote maybe 7 drafts of this book, which I have never done before. I usually write about 3 drafts of a book.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to really get it right. I was nervous about it myself when I started, especially because I was like, I've never done this before. So it's a total opposite. And this is probably like a side note, but it's totally the opposite process of the way publishing normally works. Because with nonfiction publishing, you like write a proposal and like here's what the book is going to be about. And then once you have the contract with the publisher, you write the book. But with fiction, you have to write the whole book first. And so that's what I did. And then I kept working on it and kept writing it. So it's been very, very interesting process for me as well.
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process, helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me, and I got my regular personalized privacy report, and I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.
It's Tuesday, and that means we have another Ask Shauna, and this one comes from Tamara. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Tamara says, "Hi, Shauna. I'm hoping you can help me out. I have a couple of questions about budgeting. I run my budget through an Excel spreadsheet that I work on at least every payday biweekly. I own my own home, and all my bills that are coming out are out of my sole income. I have a stable job, but I seem to worry about my monthly spending even though I can track my expenditures and have them fairly stable. My first question is, how much money should I have as a buffer or cushion in my checking account? The second question is, when I want to put money aside for savings, when is the best time to do this? Most of my bills fall at the beginning of the month, but I never know when the best time is to move money around." Great question, Tamara. And I wish there was a clear-cut answer for you. Much of this will depend on what makes you feel most comfy. And sometimes that takes trying a couple of different things to be like, okay, yeah, this is the place where I feel comfiest with my money. But I'm going to give you my two cents for what it's worth, my opinion, what I do, and hopefully you can use this as a little guidance. So for your buffer, I personally like to try to keep about 30 to 50% pad on my fixed expenses in my checking account. It doesn't work every single month. There are some months where I have to dip into that pad, but in general, that's a number that makes me feel comfy. So let's say that my fixed expenses, the stuff that I have to pay, is $5,000 a month. I'm just picking this number out of air. I like to keep an extra $1,500 to $2,500 in my checking account as that pad. That's what I have found works well for me and helps even out months when I have extra expenses like a car repair or we're traveling or just something comes up. But I would say find a number that makes you feel like you can sleep at night knowing it's there. And for all of us, that's going to be a different number. So again, this comes back to that trial and error of figuring out what is going to make you feel the comfiest. My only caution is that you don't keep too much in there. So some of us get in the habit of keeping too much pad in our checking account, and it's not a bad thing. But the problem with too much of a pad is then that money isn't working for you. It isn't growing. It isn't invested in a high yield savings account, anything else. It's not growing in an upward momentum because you don't earn any interest in your checking account. There are some checking accounts where you do. However, generally speaking, you don't. So my only caution is to find a number that you feel comfortable with, but one that isn't too big where that money is just sitting idle in your checking account. Your number two question, when is the best time to pull money for savings? Again, it's going to come back to your comfort level. I like to think of savings as a fixed expense. So in my mind, if I think of it as a fixed expense, I'm more likely to do it every month. It doesn't mean it happens every month, but if I put my mind around it, at least it gets me focused on the positive side of savings. And I like to move it over in little chunks. So if I wanted to save $1,000 a month, I would aim to move it either in two $500 chunks or $250 a week. I think sometimes your brain can freak out on you if you move the entire $1,000 all at once versus little bits here and there. So much of money is our mind, is how we think, act, and feel about money, is those panic button moments where even if we have the money, we move it over and suddenly we're freaked out that that amount of money is gone essentially from a bank account. It's not really gone. It's moved to our savings, but our mind just sees these numbers decreasing. And it's like all of the panic anxiety buttons about money go off in your head. So we're trying to just calm the mind a little bit. We're just trying to get the mind to go, it's okay. It's okay. So if we move little bits of money, we're kind of tricking ourselves into going, it's okay. So each week when $250 comes out, it's okay. It's not that big of a deal, right? So those are the little games that I play in my head that I think really work well for most of us. But if you spend more at the beginning of the month on just regular expenses, maybe you could aim to move savings in those like 2 weeks in the middle of the month. So you're not backing it up at the end of the month or at the beginning of the month. But again, play with it a little bit. See what feels right for you. So hopefully that's given you a little bit of guidance. If you're listening and you've got an Ask Shauna question, hit me up on the website, mmoneypodcast.com. Right on the homepage, you can submit your Ask Shauna, or there's a link in the show notes. Again, these questions can be anonymous, and there's no question that is a bad question. We all learn and grow, even I do, from answering your questions. So if you got a question, I want to answer it. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's something about, I don't know if I want to use the word irony or not, but a book about finding fortune in your own backyard coming out right at that exact time during this. I mean, to me, there's just a lot of, I don't know, symbolism or something about that, because I think with so many people on unemployment, or I mean, you know, even millionaires who had mm-hmm. who had restaurants or big businesses are struggling. So we're really all more alike than we are different, regardless mm-hmm. of income or age or whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. But having a book come out about this subject at this particular time, I mean, this is the message that we all need to lean into.
Mm. I mean, I hope so. It's interesting because we're all in this time together. I think that's the other thing that's so interesting, because people, you know, I've always gone through cycles, and like, you could be that millionaire and now all of a sudden you've lost your job or that source of income or whatever it was. And that's an individual thing. But now, you know, as you said earlier, like, we're all in it. We're all experiencing it in different ways. And so people are questioning a lot of things they used to believe to be true, and, you know, hopefully looking for some different opportunities. So we shall see. But I always want to encourage people to think differently, and to, like, it's okay to be anxious. It's okay to be worried. Like, I don't think it helps to say, like, hey, don't be anxious about anything. You know, like, it's a hard time. It really is, right? Like, a lot of stuff sucks. But I think you can also say, okay, well, I am anxious, but I'm not going to panic. Like, is panic, because anxious is a feeling, right? And panic is a behavior. So I'm not going to actually, like, freak out. I'm going to ask myself, what can I do? You know, and it's not just post more resumes on LinkedIn. You know, it's not just whatever the traditional, you know, job seeking mechanism is. There has to be something different. And I think there are a lot of different things. And so hopefully people will start thinking about that.
How do you go about figuring that out if you've never been in this world? Do you have any tips or suggestions?
So first of all, if you're listening to this conversation, then I think you're ahead of so many people, because you've already kind of identified yourself as someone who wants to learn. You know, I think that's interesting. It's like, we have this self-selecting group of people who follow us or pay attention to, like, the resources that we create, because, you know, they could just be watching Netflix, or they could be playing Fortnite or whatever, but instead they're like, actually, I need to, like, do something for myself. So that's great. You're already in this, like, important first step. And I think then it's, you know, a skills inventory. What is it that you're good at? What do you have an idea already? If not, let's make a list of all the things that you know about. You probably have learned a lot in your life, you know, and no matter how old you are, if you're 12 years old, you have learned a lot. And so it's partly, you know, whatever education you've had, whatever job experience you've had, if you have a career or vocation, but then also, what are the things that you are interested in apart from that? What are your hobbies, interests, passions, et cetera? What are the things people ask you about? I mean, just kind of making a list of those things. And then a lot of the stories that I've featured on the podcast are stories of people that have gone from one of those things and found a way to package it in the form of a product or a service. And so the book also talks a lot about this. Like, Jake has to figure out, what is it that I can offer? Because at first he's like, I don't know what that could be. And then the more he kind of explores it and goes through some experiments and such, he realizes there actually are some things, you know, he could offer that are valuable. But I think
and
all
we
that,
all
so
have
I think
those,
that's,
right?
Yeah,
we all,
I think
all have
everybody
something.
Has them. Yes. I think in a very short conversation with any person, I think we can figure out what those things are. And I firmly believe that, because I often do hear from people that are like, I don't have marketable skills. I have the skills that I got an electrical engineering degree, so I know how to be an electrical engineer, you know, for a big company or, you know, whatever, but I don't know how to do the other things that you talk about. And what I'm trying to teach people are pretty basic business skills. The much more valuable skills are what they already have. Like, the much more valuable skills are that thing that you have learned about, whatever people ask you about, the thing that's easy for you, but is difficult for other people. Like, these are where the answers are. And so basically it's like, the answers are already within yourself. It's just a question of, like, pulling those things out and learning to, like, translate them a bit, to put them in the, you know, like, marketplace terms that people can buy and, you know, can give you money for them.
And what are your thoughts about dealing with fear? I mean, in particular, we're in this crazy time, but the fear around bringing an idea to life and not being attached to whether it works or doesn't work. How do you work that out in your head?
I mean, you first ask, what are you really afraid of? And you ask, what is the worst thing that can happen? Because often the answer is not that bad. You know, like, I'm not encouraging anybody to invest their life savings. I'm not encouraging anybody to take, like, a tremendous risk. I'm actually encouraging people to make safe decisions. Like, if you are trying to start a little business without spending a lot of money and doing it in a short period of time, which is the third way model, it is $100 startup model, and then the worst thing that can happen is it doesn't work. And you haven't spent a lot of money, and you haven't spent a lot of time, and you have learned something. You have learned. So actually, it's like, you have learned something through the process, that's hopefully going to help you with the next attempt. Like, that is the absolute worst that can happen. Whereas, you know, the best that can happen is pretty good. You know, the best that can happen is something actually takes off with this. And maybe you just make a small amount of money. But even if that's the case, that's pretty great, because that small amount of money feels really good the first time that you do it. The first time that you make money apart from your employer, it's just, they're like, wow, I did this thing.
Yeah.
I hear these stories all the time. And so often then from there, it grows into something more, but even just that first sign of success is so good.
What do you think, because you do talk to so many different people, what do you think we're all missing or not getting right when it comes to this idea, you say, of like self-reliance and financial mm-hmm. freedom? Are there commonalities that come up over and over again that we're all stumbling over?
I think a lot of people spend a lot of time, quote unquote, learning or researching without actually doing anything. And I try to be like understanding and respectful of this, because I know that there are different seasons in life, you know? And so like you could read a book and it's not like you like the book, but it's not immediately applicable to you. And then like a year later you realize, oh, this is actually what I need right now. So I understand that. But I think there are, you know, I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people in my community for years who like have been like going through like every resource I make, and like they like, there's not much more I could tell them, but they haven't actually done anything. So I think right. like, it's like, I almost want to say like, hey, you know, as much as I like, you know, as much as I appreciate you reading my book or listening to my show, maybe you should stop actually for a little while, you know, and like stop taking so much in and go and do something. Right? Like go and actually apply some of this stuff that you have learned or that you've been thinking about. And so I think research sometimes is like this code word for avoidance, you know, like
yes.
I'm actually doing research, but I'm really just kind of putting things off. And, you know, graduate school is a great way to do that for years, essentially.
And spend a lot of money.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
As someone who got an MBA, I can attest to that.
Yeah. I mean, I did a master's degree as well. And I'm like, yeah, I think probably a good 50% of the people in my cohort were just there because they weren't quite sure what they wanted to do next. And it seemed like a good idea at the time. That's what their friends are doing, et cetera. And then, you know, it's some of them obviously like it was a good decision, but for others, they kind of like finished and they're like, wow, what did I get out of that? And now I'm, you know, I've spent all this money and such.
Right. Exactly. Sorry. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, I think one of the exciting things now is that you can learn lots of different ways mm-hmm. and you can get that knowledge that yeah. you need, but you don't have to pay that price tag, which I think is, mm-hmm. is really, I mean, it's obviously rocking the university world a little bit, but yeah. I really love to see that pushed, because mm-hmm. there's so many different ways to learn the skills. And just because you get a certificate to hang on the wall,
yep.
it doesn't mean that you're able to use those skills in the mm-hmm. best way possible.
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking back to finding your own fortune and what you were saying about some things maybe we're missing. It keeps coming up this action piece, like taking mm-hmm. action, taking the steps. I talk about that a lot on this podcast, like just take one step a day kind mm-hmm. of thing. And is there something that, I mean, I'm sure the answer is yes, but is there something that happens to us either from mm-hmm. a confidence standpoint or our mind or whatever it may be, when we start taking those steps, does that mm-hmm. then suddenly open us up to the ability to maybe try other things?
It is the confidence and the belief in yourself. I think that is exactly it. Like when we started this conversation, we were talking about the going to every country in the world, and like, I must have learned a lot about the world. I'm like, yeah, I learned a fair amount about the world, but I think probably my number one thing that I would take away from it is I began to believe more in myself, and I began to see, oh, I could get into situations that might be difficult and I could find my way out. That's a very valuable thing. You know, that is worth the 11 years and however much, you know, it costs to do that. And so, yes, that confidence, when you take those steps and you begin to see some results, even just small results, like you get your first customer. As I said, this is like, it's like a cause for celebration. You know, if you list something on Etsy and then like you wake up in the next day and like somebody has, you know, paid $10 for it. Like, this is a cause for like shouting it from the rooftops. You know, it's a reason why, like, if you go to the pizza parlor or whatever, they have their first dollar, you know, hanging up. Because
right,
it's
yeah.
like, this is, the renaissance of your life, essentially. And this is a renaissance that is accessible to everyone. So yeah, I'm glad you're talking about next steps and encouraging people to take those next steps, because that's ultimately what it's about.
And I wanted, this is a purely
sort of selfish question, if you will, but I'm curious your thoughts on the whole idea of the gig economy. We've heard this over and over and over again everywhere now, gig economy. Yeah. What do you think is the gig economy going to look like in maybe this new reality we're going to face? And people who are in the quote-unquote gig economy, what does that look like for them?
Well, I think the gig economy will continue to exist. I'm sure it will evolve in some ways. I think overall, the gig economy has done a wonderful job of marketing itself as a solution, some kind of gateway point to entrepreneurship. And the reality is, most of the people who are working on these platforms, they're actually not making much money at all. And they have very little freedom. Like, they may have the freedom to set their own schedule to a certain degree, but they have to be in compliance with all these different rules that the platforms put out. The platforms determine their amount of competition. Effectively, they determine their compensation, in various ways. And if they don't like you, then they can kick you out, right? So it's a glorified part-time job is what it is. And there's nothing wrong in your life, at some point of having a part-time job, but just don't think of it as more than that. I mean, think of it as something that you do because you need to do something today, to pay your rent next week. I understand that. But while you're driving around delivering food or whatever it is, think about what you can really do for yourself so that you're not in that situation where you have to be, doing that just as you would any other job.
I like that. Yeah. Glorified part-time job. Yeah. I love that because we've sort of seen the gig economy touted as the solution to everything for everyone. And it's good to step back and think about it from a different perspective, I think.
There's a lot of studies that have come out that shows that, actually the rideshare drivers are not really making that much money once you factor in various expenses and even the other platforms and such. I don't think they're bad or evil or anything. I just think they don't live up to the promise of, like, this is the greatest thing ever, for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I have this probably bad habit, but every time I read a book, I start with the last line in the book. And then I go back to the beginning. Okay. That's just sort of my thing, the way I read books. And the last line in your book so resonated with me. It literally ends with, "You can do more than you think," which I think, in my opinion, is such an important message for us today. And gosh, I could go ramble on and on about all of the amazing things that you've done, from your podcast to your books to your conference, World Domination Summit. I mean, it's really impressive and very inspiring for myself. But I want to leave everyone with some actionable thing they can do today, or something they could keep in their mind. So, thinking about this idea of you can do more than you think, like, what would you tell us?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're very kind to say that. Thank you. It's been a wonderful conversation. And I thank you and acknowledge you for all the work that you are doing as well. It's going to be fun because, like, years from now, you're going to be on other people's podcasts and going to be like, "You changed my life and you did all this thing." So you're doing a good job, investing in your community as well. So let's see. To answer that question, let me say two things real quick. So first thing, practical, and then one higher level. So practical. If you're not currently, like, selling anything, I would say go in your closet or in your drawers or, like, look somewhere in your house, your apartment, your dorm room, whatever, and, like, pull something out that you're not using and put it up for sale on eBay, on OfferUp, on Nextdoor, on Gumtree, Craigslist, whatever platform makes sense to you, whatever is locally available. You can do that today and you'll make $50 tomorrow. And, eventually you're going to run out of stuff around your house to sell, but this is also going to help you have fewer possessions. Good thing. And, that might lead you to think, what else could I sell? If I do that, maybe I could do something else. So that's the practical thing. The higher level thing is, I'm glad you mentioned, you can do more than you think. Like, for years, all of my work, broadly speaking, is about this theme of nonconformity, about how you don't have to live your life the way others expect. And so whether it's the season of COVID-19 or whether it's just normal life, like, as you go through life, you're going to encounter all kinds of people who have various ideas about how you should live and work and, what you should value and what you should believe in and all this kind of stuff. And, you need to know that you don't have to listen to those people, and there are alternatives. There are other ways to do things, and it's okay to find your own path.
Such a good message. Wow. Well, Chris, this has been so fantastic. I love chatting with you. I want you to tell everybody where they can go to find you, to find the book, The Money Tree, the podcast, all the good stuff.
Okay. All the good stuff. Yeah. Thank you again. So the book is called The Money Tree. You can ask for it at your local bookstore when bookstores are a thing again. But until then, any online retailer should have it, or you can go to moneytreebook.com. My podcast is called Side Hustle School. You can listen wherever you listen to podcasts or at sidehustleschool.com. And my main website is just my name, Chris Gillipo, and the same on social.
I'm even more of a fan of Chris's after spending just 30 minutes with him. My biggest takeaway is that no matter if you work for yourself or a corporate job, you can do more than you think. Whatever that means to you, just sit with it and start to think about the ways that you can do more than you think. You can pick up a copy of The Money Tree book everywhere books are sold and check out Chris's podcast, Side Hustle School, on your favorite podcast player. I promise you, you're going to love this book. On this podcast, we are working so hard to change the language around money to help everyone unlock the lives they want to live. Now you are a part of that movement, so it's up to all of us to invite other people in. So share this podcast episode with someone that you know needs to get their own money tree. Tell them why they should be listening to the podcast and invite them in so we can all talk about money in a new, fresh, and fun way. Hey, where are you going? We're not quite finished yet. We just wanted to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money and for helping us create a safe space to talk about money. For more on this episode, check out the show notes and don't be afraid to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. Seriously, we love hearing from our Millennial Money family, so send us your rave reviews. We look good in 5 stars, just saying. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.